Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Changemakers podcast. My name is Dave Corlett, and I am business director at the creative agency Shapebuy. In this series, I chat to leading marketers at what we call Changemaker brands, businesses on a mission to change the world for the better through technology. What I want to find out is the role that creativity plays in helping them to communicate the benefits of their technology. Hopefully their insights, their experience, and their stories can help you to supercharge your own creativity. On that note, this episode of The Changemakers is a particularly inspiring one, but slightly different to some of the usual episodes that we've recorded before. Back in September, we hosted our first live Changemakers webinar. It was a roundtable panel event featuring five of the finest tech marketers in tech marketing land, discussing the slightly provocative question, is tech marketing more creatively brave than ever? It was a brilliant debate, really, really cool, and I really wanted to share it with you guys. What more could you want than to listen to an hour of fascinating conversation about creative bravery and technology marketing? And even better, it's moderated by my friend and colleague, Shapebuy's co-founder, Nick Farah. Absolutely perfect. So here it is. I hope you enjoy.
Good morning, good afternoon, and also good evening, everybody, and welcome to this roundtable discussion, which we've titled, Is Tech Marketing More Creatively Brave Than Ever? We really hope you find the next hour enlightening in the politest way, which is alphabetically. Here's the guys who got with us. So first of all, we have Gleb Britschko. Gleb is VP Growth and Global Demand at Rubrik. He's a metrics-driven marketing leader with a proven track record in global marketing strategy and execution. Skilled at building and leading high-performing collaborative teams, he has deep experience in building integrated marketing campaigns that drive engagement and revenue. Then we have Jess Ellis. Jess is the Senior Director of Brand Marketing at Koros, a leading B2B digital-first CX technology platform. In past roles, Jess has worked as a creative lead, agency and client side at B2C and B2B brands, including luxury jewelry companies and the MBA. Rebecca Clayman is head of brand at Cloudflare. She's a brand strategist and marketeer with over 15 years of experience in integrated marketing and communications. Next, we have Robin Daniels. Robin is currently CMO at Matterport, where his responsibilities include all marketing, brand communications, and go-to-market initiatives. Before joining Matterport, Robin was CMO at WeWork, and prior to that has held leadership positions at LinkedIn, Salesforce, and Box. And finally, we have Shika Saxena, who is head of marketing UK at Global. Shika leads demand generation marketing there and is also responsible for ABM across the EMEA region for strategic clients. She has over 16 years of experience as a B2B technology marketer, working with Accenture, ThoughtWorks, DataSite, amongst others. I hope I've got all that right, panel. A massive thank you and welcome to you all for taking time to be on this roundtable and for hopefully giving some real insights and gems to take away and apply to their own marketing. Finally, for the people there, my name's Nick Farah. I'm the co-founder of Shapebuy. We're a creative agency based in Bristol. I'm acting as moderator here, and I'm hoping my job should be relatively easy as these people are absolute experts and passionate about their roles in B2B marketing. So, as I mentioned, the title of this roundtable is Tech Marketing More Creatively Brave Than Ever? And I'd like to put a little bit of context to this. Earlier in the year, we carried out a survey of 200 senior marketers in SME and enterprise tech-fueled companies. We wanted to find out what they understood the state of creativity in B2B marketing to be before, during, and as we touch wood, come out of the pandemic. We opened with questions around bravery in tech marketing, and the results were actually pretty conclusive. Our respondents are clear. Tech marketing is brave, and it's getting braver. So let's face it, tech marketing is rarely a matter of life or death. Nobody here is running into a burning building to save next quarter's MQLs, but there are different kinds of brave, like stepping away from the pack and spending your budget on something different or taking a bold, creative approach. That does take a certain kind of courage. After all, nobody gets fired for producing more of the same. So we shouldn't be surprised that 74% of respondents say tech marketing is brave when it goes to market. But there was a bit of a surprise here, we thought. The bigger the company, the greater the appetite for doing things differently. If you thought enterprises prevented marketers from taking risks, then think again. And this brings us to the first input from our panelists. And I'd like to ask them to respond to the title of this talk from their own experiences or experiences for the companies they've worked for. So is tech marketing creatively brave than ever? Gleb, perhaps you'd like to start.
Sure. Thanks for having me on, Nick. Yeah, look, my view on this is, you know, as I sort of, grew up in my career is, you know, I grew up in the B2B tech space, right? And the space is almost inevitably very crowded. There's always a set of competitors. Somebody's always already done it. Somebody already has produced a widget before. And so any startup that's looking to displace an incumbent or a set of incumbents really has to take risks and make bold statements to really try to stand out. It's usually pretty difficult to go and fight an 800-pound gorilla, right, who can easily drown you out with spend and cloud and, again, you know, just market dominance. And so you really have to go out there and make a big statement, but the catch is that the bravery of your statement really has to be rooted in your confidence of your product or service that your company delivers. And so really only when you as a marketing team and you as an organization believe in your product, brave concepts and statements really truly come alive. And in my experience, that's really the only way to break through the clutter, break through the noise, and really get in front of new eyeballs and turn some heads and bring some attention to your product or service.
Thank you, Gleb. And we'll go through them all and then see if there's any thoughts or questions afterwards. So Jess, the same for you, please.
Absolutely. I think springboarding off of what Gleb was saying, when it comes to marketing, we need to have a sense that you can be a little uncomfortable and clumsy. And sometimes being brave isn't graceful. And I think that especially nowadays when times are as they are, a little bit different, a little unique coming off of the last year and a half, you have to embrace that to really find success. I sit in a brand seat in our organization. So of course that's near and dear to my heart, but I have to be comfortable with also trying new things and mixing working teams. Or for example, today I'm here in my office, which is technically closed, but we're filming a video today that is completely different than anything we've done before with a small ragtag group of five people, you know, distanced and making something different happen that we're excited about. So there is a time to be brave now, but it's also fun if you can find the right ideas.
Cool. Thank you. And Rebecca.
Yeah, sure. When I think about how things have changed over the past year and a half, I think something that's come up is that marketing is always about meeting people where they are if you do it right. And so that's kind of come into sharp focus over the past year plus, right? And I think about that in two ways. Physically, people were no longer where they once were. And so that required really quick pivots that I think we've all experienced. It opened up budgets required in order to reach people where they were. And so that required really quick thinking, and the companies that did it did well, were able to move really quickly and also experiment. And so there was just a requirement for bravery, I guess, or creativity and taking some risk. And then I think the other piece is emotionally, we had this backdrop of a global pandemic to contend with, which I think changed the way we think about marketing. It required empathy, which you should always have, but I think a focus on putting the needs of the customer at the center of marketing efforts. And so it's, while that's always the right practice, this backdrop required thinking about people's needs and their individual situations and putting those needs and problem statements at the center, which can be really beneficial if you continue doing that and that carries through beyond this situation.
Thank you. And Robin.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for hosting me and the rest of the panelists. And thanks for joining today. Is B2B marketing more creatively brave than ever? I think, heck yeah, for sure. A lot of us have learned from B2C marketing about how to really tap into the emotional nature of marketing. I think it's so interesting to see if you go and ask anybody, tell me three brands that you love. It's inevitably always consumer brands. Oh, I love Tesla or Patagonia or Nike or Lululemon. And those are some of the brands I love, but you know, just giving some examples. And so I think and I see it a lot with my colleagues and this panel, is we've learned certainly like how do we market based on emotion and support with the right data to make that right buying decision for people. So I think B2B marketing used to be so boring because it was just trying to beat people over the head with facts after facts after facts. And to Gleb's point, you know, when you're in a competitive market, then it just starts all getting really blurry, like your fact versus somebody else's fact. You know, and I think about when it really started in the early 2000s, I think, you know, there were many companies back then that were starting to be more creatively brave. I think Salesforce has always been one of those companies, and I didn't come up with it, but I got to be a part of that machine. But, you know, a CRM system is not the most exciting to talk about, but Salesforce always had this vision of putting a more human face on it. That's why they have their dorky little characters and trying to make something that's really hard to relate to much more human, and certainly learning that from consumer marketing. So it gives me hope when I look at the landscape today and I see companies out there who are doing it really well, Gong and Salesloft and others, you know, they're really leaning into the emotional nature of marketing, which I think a lot of it comes from B2C. So I think, yes, we're a lot more brave. And as you know, Jess and Rebecca said as well, we have better tools, more tools today to also play into that. You know, we can hit people in the right way with an emotional message and then quickly follow up with a logical or factual based message that will help support their emotional decision-making. So it's a great time to be a B2B marketer, that's for sure. And I think, yeah, we are getting into a phase of extreme creativity, which gives me a lot of excitement and hope for the future.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And Shik, finally to you.
Love all of those thoughts, Robin, as well as totally concur with all the other panelists here. There was a quote that I came across the other day, and it was quite interesting. It said that great marketing teams sell stories and not just products and services, which really hit me hard, because if you think about Apple, they sell simplicity and not just laptops or electronics. And if you think about Harley Davidson, they sell a lifestyle and not just bikes. So I think the creative and the emotional appeal that we as marketers are able to connect, to create that connect between the brand and the customer is really, really important. And we have seen a lot of that in the last 18 months as technology marketing and technology marketers had to pivot across the world. But I still think that tech marketing is a really, really tough space. And sometimes it can be really dry, it can be really mechanical, and it can be super challenging to really tease out those emotional messages. So yeah, creative storytelling would probably be something that I think tech marketers should more and more excel on. And in fact, we have a huge opportunity in front of us to continue to push the boundaries, because finally, I think marketing has a seat at the table. Finally, the top management are looking at what marketing are doing, what are we delivering, and it is delivering business impact. So clearly, now is the time to push the boundaries within tech.
Yeah, it's interesting that pretty much all of you alluding to this kind of blurring between B2C and B2B. And is it that actually B2B is learning from B2C, or are the journeys a lot more in sync than we think? Which is just a little bit about kind of increasing that emotion side of things and why that's deemed to be brave. Do you think historically we thought that B2B marketing has, as you said, just been about the facts and the figures and the rational side of what you're trying to sell? And that the emotional side of things is just coming up. Is that something that's really been accelerated through the pandemic, do you feel?
I think it started before the pandemic, but it's certainly been accelerated by it. And I think the reason why it's hard to do emotional-based marketing is because you have to then be willing to actually be wrong or piss people off, right? Because emotional marketing will inevitably have some people who love it and some people who don't, which I think why B2B marketing for the longest time was stuck in this, trying to be everything to everyone, very vanilla, pleasing everyone. And that's why I think it's been a little boring, which is why I think we're talking today. I think we're seeing now companies much more lean into the emotional side of things. And yeah, that means that a lot of people online will either love it or hate it, or your target audience will love it or hate it. And that's okay. It's better, I think, to elicit an emotion than to just have, you know, that is the worst emotion. I'd rather have, I don't like it, than meh. I think a lot of marketers, I think, feel the same way about it. But that's the risk you take. The other thing is that's so interesting. It's not just about leading with emotion anymore, which is a big part of it, but it's also leading with purpose. More and more companies, I think, are leaning into sharing what their ultimate purpose is. And that's why you buy into, I think, some of these bigger brands that have really, you know, made it far. Think about a company like Stripe as an example. Pretty hard to relate to a payments company. You know, it's pretty boring too, if you ask me, in terms of like, this is what they do. But their whole purpose is like, they want to power and support small businesses around the world to make payments easier, like make their lives easier. And so like, everyone would nod to that and go, yeah, that's a good purpose to tie into. So you're seeing B2B companies of all sizes, you know, whether they're going after SMB or enterprise, I think be a lot more brave and starting with their purpose from the beginning, because then the customers feel like they're buying into a movement. And everybody nowadays, I think, we want to buy into something that's bigger than just the product itself, buying into a movement that you can be a part of.
Does the stack that sits behind marketing where we can really, really, really get to know our customers, mm-hmm. is that helping us to be braver so we can be braver in our emotional messaging?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were, you know, talking earlier about marketing, getting more of a seat at the table. I think the more that we know about our customers, the more we can track, the more we can learn, the more we can measure, the more we can demonstrate results. And I think that that's critical, especially, you know, sitting at a brand seat, it can be particularly challenging. And so I think having the right technology, the right instrumentation in place so that you can look closely at what's performing well and what's resonating, it makes the marketing that you do smarter. So I would say it's incredibly helpful. And the more you can personalize, that's always a goal. The more you can personalize your messaging and reach people in a way that resonates with them and then rinse and repeat where it's working well, I think the better and more efficient you become as a marketing team.
I was just going to say, we just came off a virtual customer event a couple of days ago. And those relationships that you have with your customers really kind of give you that confidence boost when you know that you're doing something that pleases them, right? So hearing all sorts of sound bites from what people were enjoying and, you know, getting together that data is something that helps fuel, you know, something you might have started to do, but you're like, okay, we should do more of this. It's resonating. People are picking up on this. So that data is valuable to have.
Yeah, and it validates what you're doing as well, which is really good.
Just going back to the point Rob mentioned about the purpose sometimes can be really, really far reaching. So at times it may not directly link back to commercials. And that's where, you know, things start to get really tricky. And sorry to bring in a slightly controversial angle to it, but you know, I'm a big supporter of sustainability, but, you know, if you think about the top level, you know, there are always questions about, right, we will support a sustainable strategy or a climate strategy, but, you know, how does this help our brand? And sometimes those kind of benefits, which are at the brand level, are very, very difficult to translate at a commercial level, because clearly there is no direct equation that connects both of them. And it probably goes back to the question of, can you actually measure the brand value and what impact does it deliver? Why should we invest in the brand? But, you know, it's a really interesting angle around tech marketing because, you know, if Oatly were thinking about, you know, who cares about cow or no cow, they wouldn't have gone on the whole spree of, you know, launching the vegan milk. So yeah, people love to connect with a certain purpose. I totally believe in that. But at a marketing level, it can be really challenging to, you know, convince the top management to bring purpose into branding and marketing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I was just going to add, latch on to what Rebecca was talking about earlier in terms of putting the customer at the center of what you're trying to do and really having, you know, empathy and understanding of what they're dealing with. For many years, the trend in tech has been like speeds and feeds and, you know, like people hanging out in the data center, like, you know, looking pensive, stock photography and all that. It's garbage, you know, like it's been done for so many years by so many companies, right? Like it's just such noise. But really starting at a point of like what the customer is dealing with in their day-to-day, right? What the, you know, what their management's worried about, what their board's worried about, right? Like what their company's worried about, what their space is going through, latching on to that, right? And then actually connecting the purpose of your business and what you're trying to help them with what they're actually, you know, like living in their day to day, I think is just like probably one of the most, you know, visceral connections that you can make with somebody when, you know, somebody's like going through their day, you know, and they have this thing spinning in their head, right? Like something that they're worried about. And then all of a sudden they see, you know, either an ad or, you know, an invitation or like some kind of sort of like pulse or an outreach. Right. Like I know, for example, like I'll be sitting there, like, you know, being stuck at home, like scrolling through Facebook or something like that and seeing a relevant ad, you know, like I'm one of those weirdos that like I will actually latch onto that, like click or register, consume. Right. Because like, you know, like the stuff that I geek out on probably like a lot of other people don't. Right. But like if it's something actually super relevant to, you know, like what I'm going through or my team's going through and something that I can share with them, it'll sort of like get the juices flowing. Right. And get people thinking. Is, you know, really for us has always been a starting point, right? Like that's where we always begin.
The point that Chika brought up, I think it's just so critical to talk about, because part one of the question is, you know, is marketing brave? But I think the part two of that question is everybody around you brave? Because we can be as brave as we want, but if there's no faith in actually taking a chance on this message from the board level, the CEO level, the people around you, you're never going to be successful. And this is where I think you see a lot of times that companies chicken out. They're like, they want to push the boundaries, but then but if we can't measure it and we're not really certain of the results, let's not. Let's go back to just putting all our money into growth marketing or performance marketing. And it's like, because you get tangible results. But we all know that building a brand just takes time. You don't do it in a quarter or two. You do it in 4 or 5, two years, 3 years, maybe. It takes time to build a really strong brand. And you have to have the courage to lean into that. And that comes from the board. I think it comes from certainly the CEO on down, because if you don't have that support, it's going to be hard. I love what Kyle Lacy, the CMO of Seismic, wrote recently about this on LinkedIn. He said he has this strategy where he has alignment with the C-level and the board of 80% of their budget just goes to driving performance metrics. But 20% of the budget or so goes to driving long-term brand awareness and engagement. And he said, we're not going to be able to measure that. And we're not going to put any like crazy KPIs because they're not going to be meaningful anyway, because brand building is a long-term effort. You just have to trust me that we're going to be doing the right things. And so getting that alignment early on is just super key, or else, I've seen, it's happened to me in the past. I've seen it just revert back to, let's do more performance marketing. Let's put more into Google and Facebook, as we know.
Is there a shift now that actually, C-levels are accepting that successful B2B marketing, it's a long tail. It is that mix of brand emotion and the rational side of some innovation.
So. But a lot of it comes down to, depends on how the company's doing. If their company's doing really well, everything's up and to the right and they're flush with cash, I think you'll see more companies be brave. But if everything is, we just got to make the quarter, we just got to focus on bringing in more sales, then a lot of it's just put money towards what we know.
There's also a number of comments there, particularly Jess from you, about marketing in the pandemic, and I think that brings us nicely to another section that we'd like to cover, which is another focus for the survey that we did was looked at how COVID has served to sharpen our focus on being brave in tech marketing. Most of the marketers said they had more freedom to be creative in 2020 than the year before. And 73% attributed this to trying new approaches because of the pandemic. I guess that bravery and willingness to try new things means that more people get to do the marketing that they really want to, the kind of reason why, a lot of you went on your career path. 3/4 of the respondents are proud of their brand's marketing communications. And in large enterprises, that rises to 90% of respondents, being really proud about their brand's marketing communications. So the first part of this question, I'd like to ask how the pandemic has affected your approach to marketing in line with your priorities. And Jess, we'll kick off with you on that.
Actually, we kind of developed an internal mantra back in, summer of 2020 that was decide, execute, iterate. And that was really from top down. So our executive leadership team kind of helped everyone feel comfortable to try something and fail, or try something and try it a little differently next time. So it empowered everybody to move a little faster than normal, and also just have the opportunity to not hit a mark or hit a goal, or they could fall short and it's okay. So giving everyone permission and momentum to really just try new things was something that really resonated with the company. And I think we all still kind of have a little bit of that even a year and a half plus later, where when we seek to try something a little differently, we don't feel like it's a mother may I situation, or you have to run it by 16 people. You kind of just, ask for forgiveness instead, I guess. But I think it's really made, especially in our situation, all remote work a little bit more pleasant as well, because you don't have that opportunity mostly to get in a room with people and really hash it out in the same way that you did once before.
Do you miss that, Jess?
Yes, I'm the type of person that would like the opportunity. A hybrid situation works best for me. I know that everybody's different, but I like having the chance to come together with a team. I know we'll get to talking about teams a little bit more later, but making sure that you have that relationship with the people you work most closely with, you have to find a way that works for everybody.
Shika, same to you.
What Jess just explained, we call it agile marketing. So yes, iterate, until you find a point where you start to get results. So excellent approach on that. But I think the pandemic gave us an opportunity to actually sit back and think about our go-to-market, because prior to that, our primary channels were field events. And, you know, within technology, it's a crazy thing. There are trade shows, there are conferences, and you have an annual calendar booked. So it doesn't really used to give us time to really think about, you know, what is it that our customer wants? So that was the time when we really, really drilled down into our customers' real problems, not just external problems, the problems that we could see from the outside, their internal problems. And for that, we interacted with our customers more and more, you know, as marketers, because, you know, sales always have this opportunity to have the one-on-one with customers. But we took the opportunity to connect with clients on a personal basis, just to understand, you know, what sort of frustrations are they encountering as a result of, you know, whatever is happening within their organizations. And that really helped us to sharpen our messages and our comms. And yes, we just, you know, use that to kind of solidify our communication, our go-to-market messages. And that came out a lot more sharper after that.
I think I would piggyback on what both Jess and Shika said about experimentation. And it's something that was very explicitly communicated from the top down at the onset of the pandemic. We have a culture of experimentation and so, but also are constantly moving really quickly. So I think having that communicated and cascaded down, I think did open up the opportunity and kind of for folks to really take that seriously, take that to heart. And it's been really interesting to see what's come out of that. You know, we did a campaign at the beginning of the pandemic that was sort of celebrating the internet, work in internet infrastructure. So celebrating the way the internet kept us connected, which was sort of risky given the backdrop but performed really well, but it was still a risk. And then another one was, we have something called Cloudflare TV. So 24/7 live streaming. And that's been a great way to connect with customers, but also really interesting in the way that it's connected employees together across the globe, because doing segments is really fun and you can do them together with other employees and get to know each other. And so I don't know that either of those initiatives would have emerged without this very strange set of circumstances that led to them. And I think there's something really, really valuable about, you know, I miss seeing people face to face, but you also have folks globally that don't really get to connect in person. And so it's kind of even the playing field in some ways and enabled some connections in disparate physical spaces that have, you know, and that have benefited, relationships have flourished because of that.
Cool. Gleb, yourself.
For us at Rubrik, and, you know, a lot of my peers and, you know, folks that I know and talk about this with, for me personally, like the biggest change has been, you know, there's been two, right? First of all, you know, like it's really like forced shift in formats. There's no more, you know, captive audience. There's no more like getting people into your, you know, trade show booth and all that. So like the format itself has changed. And you really, you know, we really had to go back and like sort of retool and iterate on the retooling. Right? Like from, you know, hosting virtual events and like transitioning like all this real life activity into a virtual format, right? And then being able to do that at scale. And so, you know, just a couple of days ago, we had what we call our data security summit, right? Which is like, you know, at this point, like a biannual event, right? Where we bring in a bunch of industry speakers and, you know, sort of like tech luminaries and, you know, public sector folks. And the format's very different, right? Like we really try to purposely do away with, you know, talking about products, talking about solutions, right? And really focus on like perspectives from across the industry, kind of like what we're doing here, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'm a big believer now that is a way better way, right? Even for the IT audience to approach, you know, what you're talking about. So that was one shift. And then the second shift is that by virtue of the fact that like you don't have a captive audience, you have a lot less time and a lot less opportunity to say what you need to say. So you have to say what you mean and you have to say it quickly, right? Because you're literally just like one click away from disappearing out of the person's view, right? If they're not digging what you're saying. And so, you know, really focusing on that. And again, you know, being short, being to the point and quantifying success of what your target audience is going to accomplish. You know, but whatever it is that you're pitching to them has really been, you know, like I feel we were already doing that before, but it's really just kind of become like the mantra now, right? Like that's the place where we start and that's the North Star when we construct messaging.
I've been remote from day one, so I haven't met anybody in the team, which is a little weird. I think it's been it's both an opportunity, I think, like Rebecca said, it levels the playing field in some way for everybody, you know, around the world to connect on equal terms. But so I think that's good. I also think productivity has gone up because we're not wasting time on things that don't really matter, like a commute and so on. I think so. And effectiveness is also up. I think the hard part is the joy is lacking. I think sitting there staring at a screen 10 hours a day is it's a little mind-numbing. It took some getting used to in the beginning, and I think we're used to it now, but it's not particularly joyful, I don't think. And I don't think you're in the best creative headspace when that's the only way of communicating, especially when you're talking about creativity. A lot of creativity is like bouncing ideas off each other. I love, you know, if the six of us were in a room together, you kind of talk over each other, one idea builds on another. It's very hard to do in this medium because there's no natural flow. It's like we're doing here, Nick goes, okay, now it's your turn to speak. Now it's your, it's like, never get into the flow quite in the same way. So I miss the in-person, but I agree with what I think Jess said, is that the future is really about flexibility. It's a hybrid future. I can see it already kind of happening. It's happening in Matterport and other companies. It's, you know, people should have the freedom to choose when and how they work, as long as the work gets done, but also in a way that maximizes the output. So sometimes that does mean getting together in person. Other times it means, you know, you can work from wherever you want if that's the best for you. But I think, you know, if the future is just all of us sitting staring into a screen 10 hours a day, not a particularly joyful future, I don't think.
You know, that's,
so I personally, I miss people a tremendous amount if that's not coming through. But I also think there are a lot of good things about this year, like the being able to kind of work on your own hours, because again, now it just matters about what you get done and how you get it done, I think, really. So yeah, but it changed everything for us. I mean, we're now fully remote, and we started just, you know, saying, okay, well, how can we collaborate much better? It requires a lot of discipline in an organization to be able to also communicate asynchronously so people are in the loop, because the worst thing they want to have happen is, you know, you get together for an hour, let's say you brainstorm something, and then you run out of time, and then you have to find another hour for seven people to get together, and that's happens in 2 weeks. So you kind of just lose the energy of that whole thing. So what I've noticed, and we're trying to fix this certainly at Matterport, you know, again, productivity is up, efficiency is up, decision making I think is still to be determined whether or not that's actually faster or slower in this new world, because you don't get to a point in the meeting, then a lot of times it's hard to get everyone back together, you know.
It's those little kind of 5-10 minute follow-ups that you can have ad hoc, and actually Shika, there's something that you said, you know the idea about, you know, agile marketing and marketing through iterations, which is kind of built up through the pandemic. I guess it's what happens now, isn't it? You know, are those guys, you know, the CISO who've wanted you to make changes because we've had to, are they going to adopt and embrace those changes moving forward, or are they going to creep back into their shells and start demanding leads? Is the momentum still there, Shika, within your global to keep that agile marketing and going across?
Yeah, thankfully we moved to a hybrid model. So that kind of started to solve some of these problems for us. But I totally agree, you know, creativity is so hard to do remotely if you were to collaborate as a team and come up with a creative concept. And to do all of it remotely is, I would say, next to impossible. But, you know, there are tools, you know, there are collaboration tools. Like, for example, we started using something like Jamboard, which I guess a lot of people here might have used. And I think that creativity is a lot about inspiration. And, you know, when that inspiration hits you, might not be the time when you're sitting in front of the screen. You know, you might out for a long walk in a forest when you're suddenly an idea hits you. So yeah, I think Jamboards are really useful in that sense, because you could always go back to them and note down another idea. And maybe, you know, if there is another circle back on the brainstorming, then, you know, just kind of kickstart the thinking again. But yes, it's a lot harder to do remotely, but at the same time, you know, it kind of brings in colleagues from different regions together. So like, for example, I had never worked so closely with folks in Latin America, North America, as well as Australia on a single campaign concept that we brought to life, which currently, you know, multiple regions are collaborating to bring it together. So yeah, there are, you know, ifs and buts about whether creativity can be done remotely or not.
The pressure of trying to be creative on Zoom calls or remotely is intense, isn't it? Because it's either working or it's not. You can either do it for 10 minutes. If it's not there, you need to walk away and come back. And I think it's not conducive to the creative process.
Well, because you can't read body language, and so much of it is like reading the energy and the body language. Like, again, if the six of us were in a room, I could see if I have an idea and Cleb doesn't really like it. And I like bounce that. But now it's like you just see people's faces. So it's like the you don't get to get the instant feedback in the same way. I don't think it's impossible. I think, you know, everyone's thinking about this and feeling it. So there's a lot of progress in the right tools, and even Zoom is getting better, but it's definitely not easy to have to be super creative on a Zoom call. I find
the focus is not there too. You know, sometimes, you know, you're sitting there, right? And like, and you have the Zoom open here and a Slack pops up and an email comes in and like a kid screams, right? So like, you know, I totally hear what Robin's saying. There's just like, there's no substitute for like being in a room with your team and just like whiteboarding and writing stuff on the board and, you know, just like jamming together for 2 hours. Like those are like some of my favorite meetings because like, yeah, you come up with like, you know, like dozens of like crap ideas and everybody like laughs at them together. Right. And then like, finally you just like nailed the one and everybody goes home and thinks about it. Right. And the next day you come back with new energy. It's really hard to reproduce that over Zoom.
We've loved being back in the studio. And even that thing that there's no such thing as a bad idea. You can sleep in it and come back. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, you would eventually nail it. I'd like to move on. A couple of you have mentioned tools and technology that can help you. A big thing for us as a creative agency, that relationship between MarTech and creativity. It's obviously inevitable that marketing is dominated by technology and the benefits of kind of reporting and saving resources, time and money, and maybe helping you collaborate more. So when you do value creativity in marketing, how do you strike the balance? Do you think we're relying too much on technology to deliver, or are we using it as an enabler for strong, brave marketing? Rebecca, do you want to come in on that one at all?
I think, you know, I think where it's used appropriately, sure. Just don't over-index on technology. I mean, if we're talking about technology as it relates to seeing leads in real time, then you're talking about bottom of the funnel. If you're looking, can you measure success? And success is measured by driving conversions today. So you're capturing demand that exists right now. Sure, then you're missing a huge opportunity that some of the other folks here talked about that is longer term and long tail. But I think as I mentioned earlier, if you're harnessing technology to kind of help you get that full picture of the full funnel to help you personalize, and you're thinking about it in a way that captures kind of the full experience of marketing from, you know, the very first engagement or the first touch through to that conversion or the closed one business, then I think it can be incredibly valuable and incredibly useful. So I think it's just about how you harness that technology, how it's interpreted, and what success looks like. And this is incredibly important. I think just framing up what success looks like, especially coming from a brand perspective, is I think critical for sort of defending the work of the team and the value that you're deriving from it.
Thank you. She could just, Gleb, Robin, anyone else can come in on their kind of thoughts on that relationship between MarTech and creativity?
Yeah, sure. I can jump in. So I think my view is that MarTech and creativity go hand in hand because, you know, technology would help us to implement those ideas, and especially in a world where we are remote. So even if we come up with an excellent idea, how are we going to execute it? How are we going to get it through? So I think having the right kind of tech to execute on some of those breakthrough ideas is really important. But at the same time, the tech space can be really, really overwhelming because there is so much technology out there. So I guess it's a difficult choice to make as to, you know, what sort of tech stack do you want to have? Plus, you know, if there are any SaaS models that you can leverage on if you didn't want to really, you know, onboard a technology full time. So for us, for example, during when we were completely remote, it became really hard to do online sales. When I say online, I just meant digital selling, you know, because the salespeople could not meet customers for a pitch presentation. And that was a big situation where marketing started to team up and partner with the sales team. And we made use of some of our AR, VR capabilities that we were actually developing for customers to develop our own pitch presentations and deliver it in real time. And people were kind of zoned in from multiple regions, and they were making those presentations in a fully branded format, you know, where there is a slide deck, there is a global branding and all of that. And we could make that happen only because of the tech. So yeah, there are several use cases. Conversational AI, for example, I'm a big fan of that, but I haven't used it so far. But, you know, something that I would love to experiment with, because we always complain about leads not being followed up with. But, you know, hey, there's some kind of tech that you can probably use to make things move faster. So I think it goes hand in hand for me.
After I left WeWork, took some time off, and I spent a lot of time with various startups companies. And so many of them would say, well, you know, how do we optimize this channel? Or how do we optimize this tool? And how do we get in front of that buyer with, you know, like just at the right time? And I'm like, well, I always ask the question, but what's the message? What's the story that you're bringing to them? And then they would just kind of look at me, you know, with all these founders, CEOs, like, what do you mean? And my point is, there's a lot of great tools out there, and you should absolutely do your due diligence on the right tool for your organization, depending on who you're going after. But it comes back to the story. You know, at the end of the day, it's about the story that you're trying to use to get in front of. That's branding. You know, in B2C, it's really mostly branding, and B2B, it's mostly product marketing that drives that with the brand team. But it's really about the story, really. And if you don't have a compelling story, you need to go back to your drawing board and talk about, really figure out what is, because every great marketing, I think, starts with two questions: why this product and why now? And so many companies are great at answering why this product. They're not really good at answering the why now. So you can look at a product and go, this is cool. But if you don't have no urgency or no reason to buy it, you'll never be successful as a company, and the buyer will never engage. And so the tools are critical, and there are great tools out there. We have a whole stack, and I feel like we're optimizing it constantly, but it's really, I think, much more about the message. And of course, I'm biased. I come from the product marketing world. That's the rank I grew up in, but so much of it. And then once you have the story, absolutely, you got to have the best team and the best stack around you to actually optimize how you get in front of those people.
That's very interesting, that idea about teams and how you, as leaders of your marketing teams, how you encourage them to think differently and think about that storytelling and maybe try and create some urgency. So Gleb, Jess, and if you want to come on there at all.
Well, I would just add that internal understanding and training is super important, even more than ever, I would say. We've done much of our hiring remote, you know, over the last year and a half. And so it's really nailing that, you know, new hire onboarding, what they learn, what they know, kind of day one to day 30, and then making sure that story, you know, for me, that brand understanding and value proposition is fed to them appropriately as soon as they walk in the door, and that, you know, we don't just go away and just assume that everybody understands and is doing their part. So I would just throw in that's important to success as a company and as a brand too, to make sure that internal team and that internal vibe of the storytelling is there.
Yeah. Gleb?
Yeah, no, look, I agree with Robin 100%, right? Like, tech is sort of a means to an end, right? It's how you deliver, right? And it's how you sort of, you know, measure and optimize, right? Like, it's a recurring cycle. And I agree 100% that tech is not going to substitute for like a bold message or a bold statement or a bold idea. Having said that, you know, measurement for the sake of measurement, right? And, you know, tools for the sake of tools. I've seen a lot of teams and companies sort of like fall into this trap, like, oh, if we just had this one tool, you know, like our lives would like be changed forever, right? And it's just like such a misconception. You know, I really think that it's all about, you know, whatever data you get, whatever measurement you get, at the end of the day, like, it's all about acting on it, right? It's all about making it democratized so everybody can access it. Right. It's about making it consumable, and it's about making it actionable. Right. And unless like those three boxes are checked, right, you probably don't need the tool. So again, you know, it's really less about the tools. Right. And it's all about, you know, doing your absolute best on like delivering the message short, sweet, you know, consumable, right. Distributing that. And then, you know, really being able to tell, right, like our folks at the top of the funnel, like, you know, in an anonymous stage, like, or not even in the funnel, are they engaging with it? What are they doing with it? How are they consuming it, right? And if it's not landing, right, you have the data and you have the tools to sort of like go back, rework, re-optimize, and launch and get it back out there.
There's 10 minutes left, and I want to come to some thoughts you want on something else, but just coming back to that teams thing, because it's so important to create atmospheres that encourage open thoughts and freedom to speak, and that idea that I often think, and I say if we do workshops with clients, it's often the quietest person in the room who has the best ideas. And if they're in a room with a load of people are going to shoot them down, and then they're going to come up and you never get out of it. So it's, you know, do you guys feel that your organizations and your teams are empowered to be creative and kind of maybe think outside the box and put things out there which maybe are a little bit crazy and quirky and never see the light of day, but it's fun to do that?
I think it's critical. A colleague on our creative team just reminded a group of us earlier this week that good ideas don't appear immediately. Sometimes they do if you're lucky, but you have to take the time and put in the effort to put out all sorts of ideas and have that safe space to brainstorm. And I think it's the job of folks in leadership positions to create that safe space, also to create the time to do it. And I think that's something that we've also recognized is really challenging, because as we were talking about earlier, we're not just all running into a conference room and sort of having a spontaneous breakout session to brainstorm together. You have to dedicate that time to doing it. So creating that safe space and dedicating the time when you're moving so quickly is challenging, because there's always things that need to be done immediately. But it's really crucial, and that's where you get the good stuff, and you don't get it right away a lot of times. And that has to be seen as something better than wasted effort, right? It's part of the process. And I think investing in that process is so critical and so easy to say and so much harder to do when you're busy.
I would agree with what Rebecca's saying, and thinking about how you empower people to do that. Sometimes it's just telling them to try it on, you know, one channel or in one placement, or, you know, test it somewhere. For example, we had a wild idea come from our new content coordinator to do kind of a cheeky, like, readings of customer reviews, and ended up having someone on the team in front of a green screen that we put like a roaring fire in the background. And the person had like kind of a Big Lebowski like robe on and, you know, glass of something, and, you know, did dramatic readings for the series of reviews. And it was great. It performed super well, seemed totally berserk when we first heard the idea, but, you know, we did it. We tried it on LinkedIn. It's performing, and we're going to do more.
Brilliant. There's a danger sometimes that, you know, creativity isn't seen sometimes as part of the day job. It's secondary to the tactical operation side of things, which is never going to work if companies want to be creative in what they do. The last point, if individually you could each give one tip for encouraging bravery in marketing.
I think I would reinforce what I said earlier, which is to encourage bravery, first create the space for people, create that safe space, and carve out time. I think just going back to this idea of empathy for folks that are, you know, that you're marketing to, but also having empathy for people that you're working with. Like, remember what it was like when you were grinding and doing that daily labor of getting the work out the door. And so I think creating that space for people to think, because you have a lot of strategic people that might be doing, they don't have time. They're doing on the ground work. So helping people out of that day to day and giving them room and space to breathe and think creatively, I think would be appreciated by folks and makes the work more interesting. But it also just creates that room. And then as much as you can, organizing your timelines and your deliveries accordingly. So setting aside time and space and budget to test and learn, and put those, you know, put a small amount of budget out there to test the little ideas if you can, so that then you can show results, some business results that can then help you sell in an idea in a bigger way.
I would say be brave or risk being unnoticed, you know, because tech marketing is brutal. And if I'm in services marketing, it is absolutely brutal, given the fact that all the different companies are talking about the same themes, the same value propositions. So we have only less than 10 seconds probably on a LinkedIn feed to catch that attention. So if you're not being brave with our approach, with our message and go to market, then we'll just not get that needle to move. So yeah, but find your inspiration. You know, no one wakes up in the morning thinking that I have to be brave today. We all think about the most important thing, and which is business impact. You know, I guess we have all slightly moved away from the word leads now, because all we care about is the actual impact on the business. So I guess start from the end goal in mind and think about the business impact and what you want to deliver for your customer. And if you're missing some inspiration, maybe, you know, just have a casual chat with a client or go for a walk or anything else that inspires you. And for me, sometimes it's about sitting with my kids on arts and crafts and seeing how creative they are. So yeah, different things inspire people at different times. So yeah, just explore, but don't forget to have fun.
Great stuff. Okay, Jess, if you've got a top tip.
These are so good. Time and space is a killer way to think of it, because great ideas, of course, aren't built in a second or a day or a week sometimes. But I think just to add to that, trust is important, you know, trusting the people that you work with, trusting that, you know, people are passionate about what they do and they want to get the job done. And so giving them a little bit of time and space is critical, but also letting the idea be, you know, something that's repeated too. So if it didn't work the first time, or maybe they needed a little more guidance, like don't just let it go, you know, give that guidance, give that kind of handholding. If it's, you know, someone on your team or someone in your department that you can help to get to that place to make the idea a reality.
Yeah, I love that idea of trust and encouragement and nurturing ideas.
This one is like, it's like asking somebody how to capture lightning in a bottle, right? Like, how do you get that, you know, like that great idea? 100% agree with, you know, what Rebecca said, right? It's all about creating space, time, and trust, right? One thing that I learned from, you know, my boss today, right? Like, he has this phrase that he always uses, trust before task. Right. And really, again, like building that relationship of trust with your team and your team members to really encourage them to take a risk. Right. Because at the end of the day, right, like bravery, it's all about going big, taking a risk, whether it's, you know, putting an idea out within, you know, a small room or putting a campaign out into the market. And so, you know, creating that intentional time, group time, right, like discussion time, knowing that you're probably not going to land there on day one. Right? No idea is a bad idea, right? I know some of these things are sort of like, you know, out of the box cliche, but like in my experience, it's just what it takes, you know? And then, you know, like Shika said, you know, you spend enough sort of brain calories, right, on the exercise, and you do it as a group, right? And you bounce ideas off of each other as a group. And, you know, in my experience, you always end up on landing one, right?
Cool, thank you.
And that's going to be the one.
Robin, finally, your tip.
Have fun. Got to have some fun with it. Nobody ever said that B2B marketing had to be boring. And your buyers are also human. So have some fun in the way you approach it. You don't have to be flippant or unserious, but you can have some fun with it. That's my tip.
Brilliant. That's great. Thank you to everyone who's joined us, but also a massive big thank you to our panel here. There's been some great insights. I genuinely believe that we are living in very exciting times in B2B tech marketing. The onus is on every one of us to take these opportunities, maybe take some of these tips that I do, that it's okay to be brave and to fail, you know, but at least we have to try and then try again. Thank you very much, everybody, and we'll catch up soon.
I would say be brave or risk being unnoticed, you know, because tech marketing is brutal. And if I'm in services marketing, it is absolutely brutal given the fact that all the different companies are talking about the same themes, the same value propositions. So we have only less than 10 seconds probably on a LinkedIn feed to catch that attention. So if you're not being brave with our approach, with our message and go to market, then we'll just not get that needle to move.